with Green Farm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green. It's Friday, the 12th of February, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, big selection calls by Andy Farrell as medicine plays out in the media.
Honestly, I thought it stinked. I thought it stunk. On so many grounds, I suppose I'll leave it at that.
Alan Colley and Fergal Brennan are with us to talk Premier League. Can Liverpool get back on track against the Foxes?
Launch long, trying to set Jamie Vardy away. And he's there. Oh, what a goal! You have just seen something right out of the very top drawer. That is breathtaking.
Plus, we have Jane Mangan on reforms in racing, Jeff Shepherd on Tom Brady's party week, and we have our last Fitbit and Green Farm goodies to give away.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM, and we really would love to hear from you. Marie, it's a busy weekend yet again, and we have Irish news, team selections in.
Donegh, I actually just pulled in my chair, put my feet under the table, just about, I'm really excited about getting stuck into this.
The Irish team, yeah. Well, obviously everyone's going to make light of the senior player group that we're missing, but it's an exciting team. Hugo Keenan, Keith Earls and James Lower are back three. Gary Ringrose and Robbie Henshaw, who were outstanding last weekend, are still in our centres. The new blood comes in at 9 and 10, where Jameson Gibson-Park and Billy Burns go out. The same front row as last weekend with Keen Healy, Rob Herring and Andrew Porter. The unbelievably impressive Tadhg Byrne last week, he was brilliant. He's partnered in the second row by Ian Henderson, who'll captain the country for the first time in the absence of Johnny Sexton. And then the player that probably doesn't get enough recognition, and he'll be running out for his 27 cap, Reece Ruddock, comes into that back row, which gives it really good balance with Josh van der Fleer and CJ Sander. The benches, there's a few changes in it, of course. Guy's getting a few promotions. Ed Byrne comes in for David Kilcoyne. Ronan Keller is there to cover at hooker. Tadhg Furlong, of course, will want more and more game time as we go on. Ulton Deland's on the bench with Will O'Connors, and I think the two of them can be bring real big impact. And then a great steady head in Ross Byrne and Jordan Armour to come on with a bit of X factor. But the one that's exciting me is young Craig Casey, Shannon Mann, a Munster man, uncapped on the bench, playing against France in such a big game. For him to come on for his first cap would be absolutely incredible.
It really would. And Andy Farrell was actually talking about him today, and he had some really nice things to say.
He's been top class. His energy and his application to want to get better is second to none, and that says a lot for a young kid coming into an international group with so much experience on the way. And you know, I suppose the best thing that you can say, or compliment that you can give Craig, is that the senior players have been blown away by his attitude and his will to get better every day. So he deserves everything he gets.
Nice words, Sir Donica. His application and his want to get better every single day.
Yeah, that, because it's a testing environment, Marie. So, like, everyone works hard in those environments. And look, I think Craig's a guy that knows he has to max out every time, and he certainly has. Look, it's a brilliant day for him to be there, but I think he's a guy that will look at someone like Antonio Dupuis, the nine for France, who, you know, like everyone is saying, and probably rightly so, he's the best in the world at the moment. Well, what a way to test yourself if he could come on there and really put a marker down. Obviously, we are missing a few key players. And Marie, they are big names. And not only that, they're a leadership group. When you take Peter O'Mahony, James Ryan, Johnny Sexton, Conor Murray out of a group, even an impact player like Dave Kilcoyne off the bench, people need to step up. And you know, Ian Henderson will. He's a leader with Ulster, but he needs other guys to support him. And I think that's where Reece Ruddock will be brilliant. Just someone within a pack to just worry about, for want of a better word, the shop floor. Leave Ian Henderson, look after the referee, make all the big decisions. You've someone like Reece Ruddock there who puts in massive selfless performances. So I think it was a really loyal selection, Marie. For me, if I was a player in that dressing room, if I was the likes of James Lowe, Keith Earls, you know, even Billy Burns there, I'd back my coach. He's put unbelievable faith in these lads now, and I think you get bounce back from a playing group with that.
The problem is, though, Donica, you get bounced back, but you're also going out to play against France. And we've seen how good they've been over the last few months in the autumn and again then in their opening game. So will that be enough, though?
Look, it's tough. It really is. Of course, it's going to be a really tough game. And France have targeted this game. They've put this down as a barrier to success. They don't win in Ireland, so they're coming over. And even with their selection, leaving someone like Teddy Thomas out of the team, I was quite surprised with that. Of course, you know, when you put in Damien Penineau from Clermont, he's probably better in that kicking game. And they've identified that's what they're going to get an awful lot with. Whereas when you bring someone like him off the bench for unbelievable X factor at the end, but it's going to be tough. It will be hard for us, but I'm optimistic. I really am. I just like the selection. I just know if I was in that dressing room, you would feel unbelievably like you owe your coach one. You really do. And because the easy thing there is to leave guys out or to shuffle the deck a little bit more or to push guys that might be close 80% or 90% and put them out there. Of course, it's not ideal when you lose top class players, but I'll be watching it on Sunday, hopeful that we can get it done.
On a very positive note, look, a lot has been made about the 10 test caps between the halfbacks, Burns and Gibson Park. But from a France point of view, when they won't have that much information on them, they're not used to seeing them play, will that make it difficult for them trying to go out and prepare for halfbacks that they're not familiar with?
They're the key areas you look at, because they control the position, they control the play. So as much as you would have heard all week and all the fuss that went on about Johnny, especially in the French media this week, they were preparing for Johnny Sexton. I would believe they would. We used to do it ourselves. When something like this throws up, you're all of a sudden, you know, they're around the video tonight and they're even watching videos of Craig Casey because they know nothing about him probably. They look at a few Munster games, but you want to know, there's things you need to know when you're defending guys. What arm he carries the ball in, what foot he steps with, and you cue your teammates with it. He's a left foot step, he's a right arm carry, he chop steps real low, late at the line, and that communication comes out in the pitch. So, I'm a fan of naming the team late. I know from our point of view it's a disaster. You'd love to be going through it early on, but I just think the work you can do to find out little things about certain players is really important. And I think Ireland will have their work done. I think they would have practiced and got ready for Teddy Thomas, but he's on the bench, and it's going to be a big game, so I'm excited about it. It's good to see the team today. For me, I just thought fair play to Andy Farrell.
I think as well, when you maybe park the shock almost of there being so many big players out in this game, and you go through it, like having people like Henshaw and Ringrose there together and really cementing that partnership now in the centre, like, be huge responsibility for them at the weekend.
Absolutely. And then the players that would have, you know, that would have had a lot of errors, you know, honestly, Marie, when you make a mistake, you just want to get straight back out on the pitch. And everyone's been talking about Billy Burns' mistake, but Gary had a few, to be fair to him. Keith Earls had a few, James Lowe had a few. There isn't anyone on that pitch that would probably have talked, maybe with the exception of Tadhg Byrne. But what Tadhg Byrne needs to do know is push on and back it up. And you know, like, there's a player that's really rated and everyone's probably saying, is he ready for the next step? He's an opportunity now to knock on the door and say, you know, Warren Gatland, are you watching? Because I'm at the level, if you're, you know, I'm ready to go. And I think it's those type of players that we need to step up. And we always talk about it, we need players to, it shouldn't be that senior players run their course, it should be that senior players are thrown off the bus, and we need guys to step up today now to put those senior guys under pressure, because to be fair, they've done more than their fair share. So it is interesting to see how we'll go, but I'm excited about it.
It'll definitely give us a bit of a insight into what the future will look like, as in what the next Irish team coming down the track is going to look like when you don't have those players that have been mainstay for such a long time.
Yeah, it certainly will. It certainly will. And look, I'll be honest with you, I don't know where we're there yet either, Marie, because we're stress testing these people, but at least we're doing it in a big environment. We're doing it at Six Nations. proper, this is proper test match rugby, and you sink or you swim. And you know, someone like Craig Casey might come on and get a lesson, like some of the players did last week. And that's just how cruel international rugby is. And everyone goes on about the provinces. Oh, you know, I'm picking a bad example, but James Lowe has to start. But we've all seen over the last two games, it's a big step up, and you have to learn an awful lot. So he'll improve and he'll get better, and he'll be better for the backing of his coaches. But I do think they have to make up strides on the, like, especially at halfbacks. We are over reliant on Conor Murray and Johnny Sexton, and they'll be losses this weekend. It's how big the lads can step up and play beyond themselves. But I'll be honest, sometimes, Marie, it can be a freshness within the squad, because everyone's so used to that voice. When someone else comes in, if Billy Burns grabs it by the throat, and you listen to Andy Farrell all today, he was saying, you know, he's an incredible playmaker, and you hear the training's been good this week, and you know, you wonder, can he bring something different to it?
Well, all eyes will definitely be on Billy Burns. Let's hear what Andy Farrell had to say about him.
Plenty of conversations, like I do with the rest of the team. You always try and help them find the reasons why, and the process that they've been through, etc., and see how they're able to cope and park and move on. And come Tuesday, Billy's been absolutely fine. He's been leading as far as every fly half should do within training, etc., and he's trained really well this week.
It's huge pressure though, Donica, isn't it?
It's massive, but I swear to you, Marie, he'd want to know other way to go straight back out. He would have gone out, honestly, on Monday morning to play a match, because it's the only place you can fix it. And look, he's lucky as well to have the opportunity, because sometimes that happens in, you know, I know Ron O'Gara talks about the final against Northampton in 2000, but he had a whole season to wait for that pressure moment again. He gets it 80 minutes later, or sorry, 1 week later, and he gets 80 minutes to kind of prove himself. And to be honest, Marie, the chips are down for him. He needs to sink or swim now. You know, like, all eyes will be on Billy Burns this week and his performance, and it's ruthless how tough it can be, but that's where you put yourself and that's where you want to be. So it's you know, especially that jersey is an awful weight.
In the cold weather as well.
Oh, I'm, let it freeze.
That snow.
Same here. Oh, two of us are, bar Jane Mangan, who's mad for the racing to go ahead, but I think that would be an advantage. Poor old French would have no interest if it was absolutely freezing, surely.
Surely. Well, do you know what I got a lot of enjoyment out of this morning, Donica, was watching the Australian Open, and it was absolutely fascinating to see crowds there with no masks, just chilling out, rowdy atmosphere. TM and Kyrgios were in an battle. It was just epic proportions. It actually had everything, right? It had the rowdy crowd, it had the home favourite, the underdog was trailing, massive fight back, and TM ended up winning it. But it just was, there was so much drama, and it was really, really brilliant. It just gave me a, set the weekend up nicely.
But it didn't continue, is that right? They ended up emptying out some of the crowds because Melbourne's heading into lockdown.
They had about 20 minutes to go, you know, and then they had to finish it up. Well, they didn't have to finish it up, but it did finish up, because they were going to leave. They had to leave, and the game ended up finishing just before they had to leave. But it even had that kind of that deadline hanging over it, the drama, will they, won't they, went to a fifth set. But it was just brilliant. It's like, I don't know if I'm going to top it now this moment.
Do you know what's great? The Australian Open is the gift that keeps on giving. From quarantine on, it's just been a talking point non-stop, hasn't it?
And it's only just getting going as well. So plenty. Yeah. Okay, before we move off the rugby, Donica, I know you said you're hopeful, but what does that mean? Give me a prediction.
Oh, look, we need to play beyond ourselves. France are a class. And Marie, we always said it, we could go 21 points down against France and you got to stay in the game, because there just can come a point where they have enough. And look, if we can stay in the game, the longer it goes on with us in touch, I think, you know, but I'm hopeful, us at home. And, you know, look, I was in a lucky position yesterday. You get to chat to a few of the lads, and the respect they have for playing at home is massive. I think, you know, there's characteristics from a coach that come in, and I think that's come in from Andy Farrell, how you respect your house, where you play, and the Aviv is a big one for them. And they know it's empty, but they know everyone's watching on, so I think they'll want to to put in a big performance. I couldn't care if we won by a point or half a point once we just get a result. Yeah, and look, I always find it hard to do predictions because I always go heart over head and making any sense. So Ireland by a point and to rob them would be just great. Craig Casey to come on and get an old try in the corner would be all right, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Okay, so we have a competition before we head for a break, Donegal.
Absolutely.
Our last Green Farm one of the week.
And they've been brilliant. With thanks for our brilliant sponsors, Green Farm. They have been giving us these incredible hampers that are full of goodies, including the Green Farm products, which has all their latest on-the-go chicken range. These are these beautiful little chicken bites that come in three different flavours. They're 100% natural, high in protein, and they come with a handy little skewer, Marie, so you don't get your fingers too messy. And tonight's prize is a New Year's fitness hamper. It's got everything you need. There's a Fitbit in there, there's a dumbbell water bottle, there's a brilliant journal for setting your goals and keeping an eye on your training, and there's a fantastic speaker so you can play your music anywhere you want to go. How do you get it?
So, if you want to win, all you need to do is answer the following question. In which month is the annual Cheltenham Festival usually held? So text the word green, followed by your answer and name to 51552, and we'll pick a winner before the end of the show. As always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for more.
With Green Farm, fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. It is now time to turn our attention to the Premier League. Alan Cawley is with us and also Fergal Brennan, a sports journalist. Alan, how are things?
Good, Marie. How are you? How are you, Donegal?
You had a busy week.
Busy week, Marie. Yeah, good week. No, obviously the FIFA Club World Cup we were covering. So yeah, it was really good. Obviously Bayern came out on top, as was to be expected. But I think Tigres, the Mexican team, were the surprise package of the competition, and they were brilliant. So all in all, it was a really good week, Marie. Yeah.
Cool. Fergal Brennan, what is the mood like on Merseyside?
Preparing for a massive game this weekend, Liverpool against Leicester. Given everything that's gone on for Liverpool in the last few weeks, they kind of know this is make or break. Jurgen Klopp has kind of essentially said that they know their title chances are down to slim at the moment, but you get the feeling that if they were to lose against Leicester tomorrow, that any kind of twinkle in the sky that they might be able to get back into it is over. So very much the feeling of a crunch game. As for Everton, they're still kind of on cloud nine after the Carabao Cup win over Tottenham. That was one of the most ridiculous games of football and one of the coldest matches that I've ever been to in my life.
Alan, we'll start with Liverpool-Leicester because that is the first one tomorrow, and as Fergal said, it is absolutely a huge game. And I think when you throw in the fact that Jamie Vardy is potentially going to be playing and he could be lining up against either a midfielder or a Premier League debutant, it's hard not to be a little bit worried.
No, and I think coming off the back of the disappointing result for Liverpool last week as well, Marie, and how comprehensively they were beaten in that second half by Man City, it's a huge, difficult task really for them. And Leicester have been riding high themselves. As you say, Vardy will be back in the team after missing a couple of games. Even though Iheanacho has done okay in those couple of games, Vardy will come back into the team, I've no doubt. And he will fancy his chances. He'd be licking his lips, as you say, maybe going up against the centre midfielder and a debutant in the Liverpool ranks. And that's been the problem for Liverpool, really, is that the defensive side of things and even in midfield, it's been kind of... it's just been, I don't know, there's no consistency whatsoever in what they've been able to name, and I think that's been the major problem for them. And I said it to you last week, Marie, as well, about I would have sympathy with Liverpool. Roy Keane, I felt, was out of order, really, saying they were poor champions. There's a lot of factors as to why they've been disappointed this year, and most notably the injuries that they've suffered, and it's been really, really difficult for them. I do think the title race is over for them, regardless of the result tomorrow. I think last week City put the final nail in the coffin in that match, so I think the battle that's on for Liverpool now at the moment is to finish in the top four. But I would have a lot of sympathy for the way the season has panned out for them this year.
Fergal, what way was that Roy Keane analysis and those comments, how was that received in Liverpool?
I mean, the former captain of Manchester United's comments are never going to be particularly well received by Liverpool fans. I think quite negatively. I think in the past there's been a little bit of taking criticism and constructive criticism and rolling with it. But I think given the situation with the injuries, and as Alan's pointed out, the situation they find themselves in is incredibly difficult to deal with for fans, for Jurgen Klopp, for the club. And I think it was taken in bad taste. Any Liverpool fans that I've spoken to or people that work within the media connected to Liverpool, they kind of see it as a bit of a dig at Liverpool, given the fact that they've tried to manage and tried to move players out of position to make up for the injuries that they've suffered with. And I think in terms of Roy Keane and people have, you know, dug back into comments that he made about Manchester United when Rio Ferdinand was banned after missing a drugs test and how they suffered that season. And, you know, Twitter can be a great thing and a bad thing at times. They've kind of raked over that to bring up how Keane's a bit of a hypocrite in that sense. I think Keane's point does ring true in the sense of when he's talking about retaining Premier League titles, Roy Keane knows what he's talking about. But in terms of his comments about Liverpool, I think he might have been a bit harsh. But the brass tacks of the situation is that Roy Keane knows what it takes to win and defend a Premier League title, and nobody in that Liverpool squad does.
Yeah, Alan, we had a rule in Irish camp that we didn't chat about Roy Keane and Saipan because it always divided opinion. So I'm going to move on and just ask you, how do you see this one going? Leicester-Liverpool, obviously we all know the importance, third versus fourth. How does it go?
Yeah, I just think coming off the back of the disappointing result for Liverpool, and it has been that kind of a season for them, I would actually fancy Leicester in this one, Dunica. They've been riding high. Brendan Rodgers has gone past the stage as well where he needs to prove a point to anyone in Liverpool. Everybody knows now that he's a brilliant manager, and he's proved that time and time again. And obviously, since he's left Liverpool, I know it was unfortunate circumstances for him and where to finish at that time, and he got so close to winning the league. But he's gone on to do great things, I think, and he'll be back, I think, at one of the top jobs very, very soon. So he's done a brilliant job with Leicester City. I fancy them at home as well. Whether they'll win the league, I don't think so. I just don't know how anybody's going to stop Man City. But I think if Brendan Rodgers' Leicester City team finish in the top four, that'll be a hell of an achievement for them.
Fergal, we take Alan's points on board there as well, but when you think about Liverpool and how they've played against teams that I guess would be seen as tougher opponents, they seem to be able to have an ability to raise their game against tougher teams, and especially when teams come to play football too.
They do, and I think Liverpool have proven time and again that given the way that they play, particularly with Trent Alexander-Arnold and Andy Robertson, they like teams to, as you say, play a bit of football, don't just sit in, because that denies them the space that they thrive on and destroy teams with. The issue for Liverpool now is in their heads, not in their feet, for me. And I think Leicester have so many times, and Vardy's been, you know, the architect in chief of this, he's got 7 in his 12 games against Liverpool. When Leicester sense that little bit of weakness mentally, or that lack of confidence, or lack of unity within a team or within a squad, they're absolutely ruthless at punishing them. And I think Liverpool going toe-to-toe in a footballing sense against Leicester won't have any qualms, even with the players that they're missing. They're still an excellent team, but that little bit that's in their heads at the moment, and we saw that in the final 15-20 minutes against Man City last weekend where they just capitulated. Leicester will look to play on that, and Vardy in particular, if he knows whether Ozan Kabak comes in and starts or Jordan Henderson's playing centre-back, he knows that if they make a mistake or give the ball away, he just needs one chance and he's in.
Alan, I love seeing the fixtures down on paper because it just kind of plans out. You can see that it's going to be a good day and a good couple of days of football. Man City and Spurs is on at 5:30, so that'll keep us going nicely for the day. But I was only thinking about it earlier, and I can just imagine Mourinho planning ways to park the bus and to try and stop Pep and his parade of great football. We've lost Alan. Fergal, I'll put that one to you.
I'm afraid.
There he is.
You're back, Alan. Go again.
Sorry. I just caught the end of you there. All I heard was us. Can you hear
me? Mourinho, Pep, parade. There you go.
It's Pictionary.
So
I can make a sentence out of that.
So I was just saying, Alan, that I can imagine Mourinho just trying to figure out how he can park the bus. How many ways can he park it when you're just thinking about what form City are in these days?
Yeah, that's the big dilemma for them, Marie. But I think you'll need two buses to stop Man City because the relentless form that they're in. I think they've set the record now with 15 wins. We saw them even in the cup during the week. So they're a phenomenal outfit. And to be doing this without De Bruyne and Aguero as well, it's remarkable, really. Defensively, they're so strong now with the partnership of Stones and Diaz. Cancelo has been a brilliant addition to the team. And I think what Guardiola, I've pointed that out a couple of times, what he's doing with him in terms of him becoming an extra midfielder when they're in possession of the ball, allowing Gundogan to free himself up and get into those the final third, really, where he's causing all sorts of damage with the goals return at the moment. So they just have so much firepower, and there's goals coming from all over the pitch, and that's the big question, is how you stop them. I think Mourinho will go revert to type and go back to the defensive kind of style of play that we see. I know Fergal mentioned that he watched the game during the week, and I felt Spurs' approach during the week against Everton, although they conceded five goals, they were a bit more attacking, and I think that's when they're at their strongest, Spurs. I hate to see them sitting back like what we saw against Chelsea there a week ago or 10 days ago, and I'm sure Spurs fans hate that as well. But against Man City, I don't think he'll have any choice but to do that, Mourinho, and try and hit them on the counter-attack, but I just can't see anybody stopping Man City.
Fergal, there is chats today in the papers that Aguero could be back for Man City. That would be an incredible addition at this time of the season for them.
Yeah, it would almost be kind of planned absolutely perfectly. He's obviously had injury issues at the back end of 2020, and then he tested positive for COVID in January, so that obviously then extended his spell on the sidelines. And I think what Guardiola's looked at in terms of the fixture schedule, which games can we win without him in it? So in order to bring him back when he's at optimum fitness and at the exact point where he can rotate other players out of the team. And Ferran Torres, Raheem Sterling, obviously Phil Foden, who's the blue-eyed boy at Man City at the moment, have done brilliantly as a front three. But how terrifying is it for other teams when they go, right, they might need a rest, and now we can bring in Aguero? The only thing that I see with him at the moment is it has taken him a little bit longer to get over the annual injury that he gets around Christmas time. But in saying that, his contract is up at City at the end of the season, and at the moment the noise is out of City is that he's possibly not going to get offered an extension, and if he does, it's only going to be another season. So he could be possibly playing for a new contract or wanting to sign off, and I think whichever scenario you find yourself in, he's going to take them from fifth gear up to sixth or seventh gear.
Oh gosh, that is a very scary
you've ruined Marie's weekend.
Okay, let's stop talking about Man City now and let's go back to talking about Spurs and what's going wrong there, Alan. It does feel like that Mourinho almost kind of debt spiral is in full effect. He was out today talking about Bale and an Instagram post. I'm going to play the clip and then we're going to chat a little bit about it, because it does seem like he's just losing control.
Probably the post was not even his responsibility, I don't know. But the post was showing that training session great, so I'm ready, and was totally wrong. So when I was questioned, I had to say the reality of the things, which I repeat for the last time. He was not feeling good. He asked for a scan. He had the scan. The scan didn't show an injury, but his feelings were still there. And coaches and sports science and medical people, we can never go against the feelings, because the players' feelings are much more important than all of us. So he was not ready for the game.
So if anyone didn't see the Instagram post, Gareth Bale just posted that he'd had a good session. And then Mourinho obviously is contradicting this completely. And I think when you just take a step back and look at what he's talking about and look at what he's saying and why he's doing it, Alan, you have to perhaps think that he really is just losing control of Spurs.
Would you believe, Marie, like obviously we've been here before with Mourinho, and you mentioned the spiral and the downward spiral and how quickly things can unravel with clubs, with Mourinho, and he seems to be at loggerheads with so many players, Marie. But you might be surprised, and you know my feelings on Mourinho, you might be surprised. I actually have sympathy for him here, because I think Gareth Bale at some point has to take some sort of personal pride in his attitude and his performance since he's arrived from Spurs. And his attitude has been nothing short of a disgrace, Marie. He's going through the motions, he's swanning around I've yet to see any desire whatsoever for him, from him, to think that he is putting enough in to deserve or warrant a place in that team. And even though I'm very critical of Mourinho at the best of times and his negative approach, I have sympathy in this regard, and I think he's right to come out and say that, because at the moment he's probably getting it in the neck from people as to why Bale isn't playing. But if Bale's attitude is, from what I can see, and Mourinho's dealing with him every day of the week, and that can be the only reason why he isn't in the team, I think Mourinho's right to outline that. And as far as I can see with Bale, and this has been the case with at Real Madrid prior to him coming to Spurs as well, he is completely down tools. And I'm looking at him at Spurs, there was a clip online there a couple of weeks back of afterwards, after the match, when players do some fitness work and he's jogging up and down the pitch. I don't think he has any interest in working hard enough to get into the team. So in this one, I'd be with Mourinho.
But wouldn't a good manager, Fergal, be able to get the best out of a player, or at least sort this out behind closed doors?
Yes and no. I mean, I'd be inclined to agree with Alan in most of his points about Bale. And I think the situation that Mourinho finds himself in is, I don't think he knows or he has the tools to turn things around for Bale. I think in the past, when Mourinho's had issues with players, the profile of the player, the standing of the player within the squad, within the club, was one that Mourinho was much above, and he was able to then kind of leverage that onto the player to get what he wants. Gareth Bale, in the situation that he knows that he's in, has all the power. His wages were obviously a big point when he came to Tottenham. Tottenham were only paying 50% of his wages, but that 50% is more than the majority of the Tottenham first team, the players that are playing every game, every week in, week out in the Premier League. And I think the situation that he finds himself in, he doesn't know how to get that out of Bale. Or as Alan said, Bale has already decided that he doesn't want to do that, or doesn't want to be that player. And one of the most telling things for me with Bale is, as Ireland fans, we need no reminding how well he performs for Wales. You see the way he performs for Wales in a worse team with a completely different setup. So it seems to me that when everything is in order, when all the pieces of the jigsaw are there for Bale, he is the world-class player that he can be. But when they're not, he's not interested.
Alan, just on it before we move on, could this game this weekend, Spurs Man City, could this lead to pressure from Mourinho if it didn't go his way, taking on, you know, a flying high Man City, you know, that we're all talking about his management skills? Could it lead to a bit of pressure if they were to get a bad result?
I think he's under pressure as it is, Dunica, to be honest with you. And regardless of the result at the weekend, like, if they lose to Man City, there'll be no shame in that, because everybody's losing to Man City. So I don't think that will certainly spell the end for Mourinho. I think he'll stick it out till the end of the season. But you look at them and the position they're in at the moment, they're sitting in eighth. They're only 4 points off the top four, so they're still they've a good chance of getting into the top four if things click for them. But they've a game in hand as well on all the teams that are in the top four. So they're still in with a shout, certainly. They obviously have the Carling Cup, the Carabao Cup coming up, the final. They're still in Europe as well. So Mourinho will argue all those things in his favour. Is he the man? I never thought he was going to be the man to bring silverware to them in the first place anyway. I still don't think, from what I've seen. But just certainly on this incident alone, and I know sometimes I worry, Dunica, when you see too much noise coming out of camps, because you look at all the camps when things are going swimmingly, there's never a word out of any of them. Man City, Leicester, West Ham, all the teams that are going well. Liverpool, there's a bit of noise coming out of there when things are not going well. Spurs at the moment, I always worry when I see that. But on this one, I would absolutely, and I would double down on what I'm saying about Bale. I think Bale has to take some sort of personal pride, look himself in the mirror and ask himself, is he really putting it all in? Because there's no way, from the Bale that I knew or the Bale that I've seen over the years, and how well he's played and the superstar that Bale was, and how good he was at Real Madrid, there's no way in a million years he's putting everything into what he's doing at Spurs at the moment.
Is he finished now, Alan? Do you think that's it now?
And that's the thing, where he shouldn't be finished. But I'm looking at him at the moment, and the situation going back to even at Real Madrid, the money he earns, and I'd never throw that at a player, but he's earning absolutely colossal money. And he was more interested in playing golf and the lifestyle and the stories that were coming out of Madrid and never getting himself right to get into that team. So would you argue that Zidane and Mourinho, both two of the superpowers of management, are the both of them wrong about his attitude? I wouldn't think so.
Okay, well, we'll see now how he gets on for the rest of the season. We were talking about teams being in with the shot, Fergal. Are Manchester United still in with a title shot, do you think? West Brom on Sunday?
again, I think every other team looking up at Manchester City are utterly dependent on how things pan out for them. I've been really impressed with United this season, and Solskjaer, who took a bit of flack at the back end of last season, and was he up to the job even though he got them into the top four in the Champions League. I think they're well placed to at least get top four with a bit less hassle than they did last season. I think they needed to beat Leicester on the last day to get it. But I think City, it's not just United, City are far ahead of everybody else, and they do still have a game in hand on everybody inside the top six, which you'd imagine they win, and that edges them on. I fancy Man United to win away at West Brom. West Brom are having all sorts of problems at the moment. But in terms of chasing City down, I don't think United will, in exactly the same way, I don't think Liverpool will. Obviously, Solskjaer and Klopp are not going to come out and say that too openly. But no, I can't see them chasing down, but I fancy them to win this weekend.
Alan, you'd agree, we didn't know Paul Pogba, but West Brom, you know, second from bottom, they're in trouble and they just concede so many goals.
I definitely agree without Pogba, Dunica. No, they should, yeah. I would agree with what Fergal says. They will beat West Brom. West Brom are obviously, since Allardyce has come in, nothing really has changed there. If you look at their last five games, they've only picked up 1 point as well out of 15. So they're going to get relegated, and Man United will beat them at the weekend, yeah.
Okay, Fergal, so we know what type of Leeds are going to show up at the Emirates on Sunday afternoon, but what type of Arsenal are going to show up?
I think personnel or performance, I think your guess is as good as mine. At the moment, in terms of system and results, everything just seems to be all up in the air with Arsenal at the moment. I think the progress that they made at the back end of 2020, when Mikel Arteta seemed to have a relatively settled team and they seem to be moving in the right direction, has just frittered away in January and now into February. And I think coming up against the Leeds side that you would say Arsenal should be beating or should at least be competing with, Arsenal fans will have very little confidence of that, because they know that the way that Leeds play, if Leeds are on top form, they can just tear them to bits. No Bernd Leno, no David Luiz. Depending on your persuasion on David Luiz, you might say that's a bonus for Arsenal, that they're in the middle of a suspension. And Thomas Partey is going to be missing with an injury, and that, for me, kind of sums up the situation that Arsenal find themselves in. Thomas Partey is an excellent player. They worked really hard to get him from Atletico Madrid, and all the ingredients of the type of player that he is and what he offers, you would say, would be a dream for what Arsenal need. But once again, what's become quite common with Arsenal in the last few years is, for whatever reason, it hasn't quite clicked into place. So it's very difficult to gauge where Arsenal are at the moment in terms of the progress that they're making, because it's constantly one step forward, two steps back with them.
And Alan, the other game, Everton taking on Fulham. This is a real opportunity for Fulham, isn't it, to maybe start making a push to get out of the bottom. Do you think they'll have enough?
I'm not sure against Everton, Dunic. Everton are going really well, and you look at the position they find themselves in, there's a lot of incentive for them to win this match and get themselves up into the top four on level points with Liverpool. And who would have thought that at the start of the season, when you think of the gap that was there at the end of last season? So Ancelotti has done a really good job with Everton. They obviously had a good win in the cup over Spurs during the week as well. But Scott Parker, to be fair to him, he keeps coming out very positive. There's a lot of fight and talk out of him. The problem with Fulham, Dunic, is that they just can't get any victories. It's too many draws. Like, you look at the amount of draws that they've picked up, it's 9 out of all the teams that are down at the bottom. Only Brighton have more, and even if they were to convert a couple of those, they would have been better off and losing a couple rather than having 9 draws. So it's a difficult one for them. I think Everton should beat Fulham over the weekend, even though I like the job that Scott Parker is doing, and even though the club are sticking with him as well. I like to see that. One of the main reasons why I hope West Brom get relegated is because of the way they treated Slaven Bilic at the start of the year. I thought that was bang out of order. But you look at the way Sheffield United are treating Chris Wilder, and also Fulham with Scott Parker, I like that.
Alan, just before we finish up, I'd like to give a nod to Wes Hoolan. He's named the League 2 Player of the Month, and he is absolutely flying it at 39 years of age, dragging Cambridge United towards League 2 glory.
Well, Marie, I've had a good week, and I text Wesel today and I got a reply back with a big love heart. So that made my... So Valentine's Day has arrived for me already, Marie. When you get a love heart from Wesel, you know you're doing something right. But he's just... We all love Wesel, and he's been amazing. And I actually saw a tweet from Luke Chadwick. You might remember Luke Chadwick used to play at Man United. And he put a tweet up during the week because of the form that Wesel has been in. And he said, "Is Wes Hoolahan the greatest player to ever play?" And I think it was League 2, he said, or... just about the performances that he's putting in. But he's 38, yeah, still doing his stuff. And it was funny, I watched a little clip of him and all those little things that we used to love about him in training, the little flicks around the corner that are so telling when you see Wes, like you wouldn't even need to see his head and you know just by the movements who it is with his little shimmies with the left foot. I saw one during the week and I thought, even at 38, he's still doing the things he was doing at 18. So it's great to see. And yeah, he's just, Wezzo's been a star over the years.
He really has, Fergal. And I think everybody here in Ireland anyway just loves seeing him do so well. Like the reaction online to him today has just been lovely.
It has. And as Alan said, you can just see, it's always in the way that he plays. You can just tell that he was always going to be able to play beyond 30 and beyond 35 because he's so intelligent with the ball at his feet. He doesn't necessarily need to be running past people. He's cleverer and he's better with his touches and his technique than most of the players playing around him. And yeah, obviously, League Two football with Cambridge is a bit of a step down from what he was playing when he was with Norwich. But the ability that he's had, or sorry, that he has always shone through. I just think that everyone kind of looks at him now and kind of wishes that maybe he'd come to the fore with Ireland a little bit earlier, or maybe he got his Premier League chance a little bit earlier, because in terms of talent, he's as good as many an attacking midfielder that's played in the Premier League.
Okay, well, we're going to be talking about Tom Brady a little bit later on, but give me Wes Hoolan, Annie J, Fergal Brennan and Alan Cawley. Thanks so much for joining us. We're going to take a quick break.
Thanks,
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Snack smart with Green Fern's new high-protein snacking range, available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back now. It is time to talk racing. And earlier today, the HRI announced that all thoroughbreds in Ireland will be liable for testing without notice on both licensed and unlicensed premises. And CCTV cameras will be installed in stable yards at every course as part of stricter anti-doping measures to be deployed by Horse Racing Ireland. For more on this, we are joined by Jane Mangan. Jane, let's just start with the testing without notice on both licensed and unlicensed premises. How important is this, do you think, just given the amount of focus now on anti-doping and the amount of questions that have been asked of late?
Yeah, I suppose, Marie, it's probably a natural progression. I know the previous rule had been that there'd be 24 hours notice given, I suppose, for the person who's caring for the animal to get organised. But essentially, when you are dealing with something as important as testing, no notice, and I suppose it gives the IHRB vets more power. The fact that the Department of Agriculture has given them their support to basically elevate them to the authorised officer status, essentially, I think it's a natural progression and one that the industry will most likely welcome across the board, from stud farms to horses in training. I think it's a positive move.
And given all the conversations of late as well, I'd imagine that the HRI promising increased transparency and consistency of disclosure around reports into testing will also be a very welcome development.
Absolutely. It's one thing that was criticised perhaps in most recent cases and recent months. We want to know figures, we want to know levels. If horses are obviously, if their tests are positive, we want to know levels, and we want to have basically answer the questions before they're asked. And I think the IHRB know that. They've obviously been bombarded with communication from around outside the industry, and it's because people care, it's because people want us to succeed. And obviously, if there is any wrongdoing, we want to rectify it. And I think the whole improvement, this is what it's aimed at. And I can imagine their communications and the transparency of what they do is pivotal to progression.
There was reports earlier in the week as well about the installation of CCTV cameras in stable yards around the country. And now the HRI again today have said that this is going to go ahead and they're going to provide funding for the installation.
Yeah, it's about time, Marie, to be honest. I was under the illusion that it had been done before the incident in Tramore happened. And I suppose now the Dáil Public Accounts Committee have invited HRI to a hearing on March 2nd, where essentially Brian Stanley wants to question how the previous money given for CCTV was spent. And of course, he wants to see a timeline for the planned installation for what was announced today for CCTV. So going forward, I think all racetracks having CCTV, obviously it sounds great, but it should have happened before now.
Okay, well, we'll be all watching that on March 2nd, no doubt. So, Jane, we can move on to the action now. Well, whatever action is left. The snow seems to be affecting the UK anyway.
Yeah, I suppose we're hardy here. We try and hold on for as long as we can, Marie. Warwick and Newbury were to stage big meetings tomorrow. Unfortunately, they have to come to the weather, although Newbury have rearranged for next week, next Saturday. But we are lucky. Hopefully, Nace will get the go-ahead tomorrow morning. They are subject to an inspection at 7:30 in the morning, and I'll hopefully be at Punchestown. But Nace tomorrow, we're starting. There's a novice chase tomorrow, a mare's novice chase called the Opera Hat, and it's a 5-runner race, but it's a fascinating renewal of the Opera Hat because Ellie May, many people's fancy for the mare's chase at Cheltenham, takes up only her 4th engagement over fences. She's got a rating of 152, and the last time we saw her, she ran a gallant 2nd to Alaho in the horse and jockey chase at Thurles. I think this is a perfect spot for her. She's got Shattered Love to overcome. Shattered Love is of the same rating, both off 152, even though Shattered Love receives £5. I think Ellie May is the one on the up. Shattered Love has been there and done it. She's an 11-time winner, but Ellie May is the young pretender, and with 5 runners in here, it looks like the obvious next step for her.
Brilliant. Jane, before we move on to Punchestown, you're actually covering on Racing TV. Anything else at Nace that you'd keep an eye out for?
Look, the card is obviously subject to inspection. There's 8 races, there's big fields, and to be honest, that was the one that stood out for me. There is a novice hurdle there over 2 miles as well, where I think Druid's Altar for Joseph O'Brien could run a big race, as Autumn Evening as well. But hopefully they get the go-ahead, because it's a very competitive card and we're starved for domestic action.
Okay, on to Punchestown, and there's the Irish Grand National Trial. How do you see this one going, Jane?
Yeah, well, this is obviously such a lottery of a race. Jiggenstown has 6 horses in here, but there's some very interesting profiles. And I think the horse that might top the market is called the Big Dog. Now, this guy is an entry for the National Hunt Chase at Cheltenham. And it's interesting that Jamie Codd takes the ride in the Punchestown race on Sunday. Now, naturally, the National Hunt Chase is an amateur rider's race, but as it stands, amateur riders can't ride in Cheltenham at the moment, so it's all a little bit of an up in the air subject. If it were to revert to its normal status of an amateur race, then the Big Dog and Jamie Codd would be well acquainted, because they're going to team up on Sunday. The Big Dog is a dour stare. He's an 8-year-old. He's had 4 runs over fences. He still remains a maiden. And you're probably thinking to yourself, God, this horse hasn't won over fences. What is she talking about? But he's been running really good races in defeat and now finds himself on a mark of 136, which should be highly competitive against horses like Discordantly, Moy Henna, Screaming Colours. And the Jiggenstown contingent are led by Nick Loft, who I think ran a super race last time, having been off the track for nearly 2 years. He was 3rd behind Enjoy Dallin at Thurles. But if you were giving me €5 to put on for Marie and Dunica, I think it would be on the Big Dog.
Great name. Anything else on
write it down, Marie. Write it down.
Definitely. Anything else in Punchestown?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a novice hurdle there as well. 5 or 6 runners, Power of Pause, The Devil's Coachman, Fire Attack, all major players. I think the Devil's Coachman is probably likely SP favourite, but keep an eye out for Fire Attack. He's got a hood on him now, first time. He's been very keen, too keen on his last couple of starts, but he's been running good races in defeat. And when he was 6th to Appreciate at Leopardstown, he was forever too keen. And before that, when he was 2nd to Sakira at Navan, he actually ran away with his rider. So I think if he settles, that's a horse that could run well despite his form figures.
Jane, before we leave you go, we saw you last weekend with Davy Russell, and he's on his progress back towards getting ready to get back out for Cheltenham. Were you chatting to him about it? Do you think he'd be confident of getting back there?
Well, I was watching him in the cold, and he was itching to get back. His hunger is just infectious, and I hope now with Cheltenham on the horizon, with the horses that he has basically lined up, provided he's fit and ready and able. You know, wouldn't it be a masterful story if he could get himself back from such a serious injury? But he will have missed not being part of the action at the Dublin Racing Festival. But wasn't he the lucky guy standing between myself and Ruby?
Didn't he lock out? Absolutely. Jane, thank you so much. Wrap up for Punchestown on Racing TV. You could be blue by the end of the day. Have a great weekend, and we'll chat to you soon.
Thank you very much.
With Green Fern, healthy snacking made easy. Green Farm's high protein on the go range, available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Well, so the third ad break was a little bit awkward because my husband wears Air Max as well.
I tried
every
to.
Every day.
I had to bite my lip when I heard it. What a brilliant question by Jennifer Zamparelli. What do you hate about your husband?
Oh, it's classic. Brilliant.
Sorry, it's tiddled me. Okay, it's time to head stateside and we're joined by our great teammate, Jeff Shepherd. Shep, how are you?
I think we might have lost Shep already.
Well.
Yeah. Oh, no, I have him back. He's on external. Here we go.
Hey, Shep.
Hey, I'm great. And look, if y'all ask, if Jennifer asked my wife that question, it would take the whole show.
It's all about Shep, isn't it? It's just such a great question to ask. Shep, we'll get into Valentine's in time, but are they still celebrating in Tampa Bay?
Oh, my God. I mean, so, yeah, you know, less than a week later, you know, after the Super Bowl, the big win on Sunday night when they really just dominated the Chiefs, you know, I guess I don't even know if it's following COVID protocols or not. I'm not exactly sure, but they decided to have a boat parade on Tuesday. And, well, I guess really the only way you... The only thing you could say about Tom Brady was he was day drunk. I mean, just having the time of his life. And look, you know, he's married. He's got a bunch of young kids. He's out of the house during the day. He's on a boat. It's happened to all of us. You know, I'm not one here to throw Air Maxes at somebody. OK, I mean, he just had some fun. And it was great video of him getting let off the boat afterwards. And then he tweeted out, had just a little avocado tequila. I mean, he's just living his life, you know.
He certainly was impressive in the final, Shep, and you mentioned it. It was fairly a procession, wasn't it? 31-9, they really did pull away.
I mean, guys, defensively, they played... Look, I have made many predictions on this show over the last decade, and about four of them have come true. And one of them was the Super Bowl last weekend, okay? So I am going to toot my own horn for a second. I mean, defensively, the Bucs just played phenomenally. They just completely shut the Chiefs down to the point where they kicked three field goals. Think about how high-powered that offense is and, you know, how much y'all have seen them in Mahomes and how great they are. And they just could never get on track. And you know, Brady and his squad just, I mean, they were never in doubt in that football game. And so he gets his seventh, Gronk gets his fourth, and just really just an incredible effort by the Bucs over the last 2 months of the season, 2.5 months, when they lost to the Chiefs in the regular season, and they win out after that through the regular season and into the playoffs. And so, you know, kudos to Bruce Arians and his team, and obviously Tom Brady getting all those free agent players to come to Tampa to put that team together.
What about Mahomes? You know, he's been accused by some of his teammates of throwing him under the bus with some of his comments that he wasn't getting the type of ball in space he would have liked.
Yeah, I mean, look, the offensive line, I mean, there's really no way to sugarcoat it. They were awful. I mean, and it's unfortunate. I mean, they had guys opt out before the season started, and then they had a bunch of injuries. And again, they were going up against probably, you know, one of the top two or three defensive lines in the NFL. And, yeah, you know, you hate to see, you know, a quarterback come out and you know, kind of push blame on us. It was a complete team effort. I mean, offensively, defensively, you know, the Honey Badger, Tyrann Mathieu, Brady just was picking on him, and he got under his skin, and the game was over. You know, I mean, he lost kind of the mental game there going up against Brady. You know, Mahomes doesn't need to be deflecting anything. It's a total team situation. He didn't play well. He didn't get any help. He made some unbelievable moves to get out of would-be sacks, but the balls weren't caught. So it was just, you know, they had a bad day, and unfortunately they had it in the Super Bowl.
Shep, the news cycle moved on pretty rapidly today with the news that J.J. Watt is leaving Houston. He announced it 4 hours ago, and it's got over 4 million views already.
Yeah, he dropped the video saying that he and the Texans have agreed to part ways mutually. You know, they're going to, instead of trading him to one team, they're going to let him try to find out where he is the best fit. You're going to think he's going to try to look for a playoff contender right away because just of how bad they've been the last couple of seasons. But, you know, as great as he's been for a decade on the field, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention in 2017, he set out to raise $200,000 to help Houstonians after Hurricane Harvey made landfall, and he raised $37 million. And so that's going to be like the first line in his obituary, many, many years from now. You know, I'm just an incredible advocate for the city of Houston off the field as well.